Morning. Our reading today is taken from Luke chapter 18, starting at verse 31, and that can be found on page 1052 in the red Bibles in your pews. That's Luke chapter 18 on page 1052. Jesus took the 12 aside and told them, "We're going up to Jerusalem, and everything that is written by the prophets about the Son of Man will be fulfilled. He will be handed over to the Gentiles. They will mock him, insult him, and spit on him. They will flog him and kill him. On the third day, he will rise again." The disciples did not understand any of this. Its meaning was hidden from them, and they did not know what he was talking about. As Jesus approached Jericho, a blind man was sitting by the roadside begging. When he heard the crowd going by, he asked, "What was happening?" They told him, "Jesus of Nazareth is passing by." He called out, "Jesus, son of David, have mercy on me." Those who led the way rebuked him and told him to be quiet. But he shouted all the more, "Son of David, have mercy on me." Jesus stopped and ordered the man to be brought to him. When he came near, Jesus asked him, "What do you want me to do for you?" "Lord, I want to see," he replied. Jesus said to him, "Receive your sight. Your faith has healed you." Immediately he received his sight and followed Jesus, praising God. When all the people saw it, they also praised God. Jesus entered Jericho and was passing through. A man was there by the name of Zacchaeus. He was a chief tax collector and was wealthy. He wanted to see who Jesus was, but because he was short, he could not see over the crowd. So he ran ahead and climbed a sycamore fig tree to see him, since Jesus was coming that way. When Jesus reached the spot, he looked up and said to him, "Zacchaeus, come down immediately. I must stay at your house today." So he came down at once and welcomed him gladly. All the people saw this and began to mutter, "He has gone to be the guest of a sinner." But Zacchaeus stood up and said to the Lord, "Look, Lord, here and now I give half of my possessions to the poor, and if I have cheated anybody out of anything, I will pay back four times the amount." Jesus said to him, "Today salvation has come to this house, because this man too is a son of Abraham. For the Son of Man came to seek and save the lost."
Morning, everyone. Make sure my mic's switched on. I met your vicar for the first time today. And how many of you know, not only is his name Adam, I work with an Adam. And Adam, the vicar, called me a number of times over the past couple of weeks. And I sadly didn't get back to him. Partly because my visual voicemail isn't working, but I did eventually hear his messages, and then I was able to speak to him via my Adam, LCM Adam. There was a little bit of cross communication, and I feel the need to apologise up front and say that there was a little bit of a misunderstanding. So. Forgive me for not completely tackling the first portion of our text, because I've only focused on the second portion of our text, and I feel that confession is good for the soul. My brother Adam, I was saying to the guys at the back, we had a bit of confusion with the translation as well, and I said, "Well, we'll see how things go. Maybe I might get invited back. If I don't, then I know why." Here's another reason not to invite me back. But nonetheless, conversations with Jesus. We are going to look at a conversation with Jesus. And what I have done is I've actually got a title for verse 1 to verse 10 of our text. And so the title for our message today, verse 1 to 10, is "The Little Big Man." Subheading, sought whilst seeking. I think this needs a slight explanation, not so much the little in the title, but the big man part. So I'm from a West Indian background, and this is a West Indian kind of African colloquialism, a slang word that basically describes an individual with authority and with power, reputation, and a highly respected individual in the community. A don, if you like, a big man. And this identifies at least the main character that Jesus is going to have a conversation with in verse 1 to 10. And I know at the moment it probably sounds like a contradiction in terms, right? A little big man. Now, someone else who came to mind whilst I was thinking about this text was Madeleine McCann. She went missing in 2007. And as you can see, there's a computer-generated photo or image of what she possibly could look like when she was 11 years old. Sadly, she's still missing. Can you imagine if she was found? Can you imagine what it would mean to us, those who are onlookers? Can you imagine what it would mean for the media? I mean, we'd hear about it for the next month, right? Can you imagine what it would mean for our parents, particularly our mum? But now, I suppose, in one sense, it's not my intention to be flippant. And they say that fact is greater than fiction. But what would it be like if we were able to merge fiction with fact? Imagine if Maddie's dad was Liam Neeson. You might remember him. This is one film that I remember. The other ones I didn't remember so well. Taken, in this film, he actually goes and rescues his daughter that's been kidnapped, right? But what is really crazy is, I don't know, do you remember when he calls up the guys who actually have his daughter kind of captured? He calls them up and he's like, I don't know who you are, I don't know where you are, but when I find you, the truth is, Liam Neeson, the character that he plays is just a character, right? Liam Neeson actually couldn't really help because Liam Neeson isn't that character, right? He's a weak, incapable, and an individual that's just as unimpressive as we are in real life. I don't know if you know the story about his wife. His wife, Natasha Richardson, she fell over in a skiing accident, bumped her head. They encouraged her to go to the hospital. She refused, and then later on that night, she had an aneurysm and she died. And sadly, Liam Neeson wasn't able to save his wife. How many of you know Liam Neeson actually couldn't save Maddie? He's just a limited human like the rest of us. And often we have fictitious characters that are wheeled out in front of us. I couldn't decide on which one, but Batman or Spider-Man or Iron Man. Superheroes, right? If only they were real. But imagine if there was really someone who was able to liberate, someone who was able to save, someone who was really able to rescue. Well, as incredible as it may sound, this is the second person that we're presented with today in verse 1 to 10. Today's message is about a man who was lost in desperate need of being found, a lost little big man. Can you believe that it's February already? I said to someone the other day, it'll be Christmas soon. It's February, and in a few months, it's going to be Easter. Our text is actually a week before Easter, contextually speaking, 7 days before Jesus will enter into Jerusalem. And Jesus is passing through Jericho on his way to Jerusalem to die on the cross. Now, here in Luke, for the past 3 or 4 chapters, we see this theme of valuables being lost and found. In chapter 15, we see the story about the lost sheep. And instead of rejoicing as you would when you find something that's lost, consistently there is a group of people who are unhappy and eventually even disgruntled in chapter 15. It says in verse 1, now the tax collectors, which is the same identity as our individual Zacchaeus in our text. It says, the tax collectors and sinners were all drawing near to him, that is to Jesus, and the Pharisees and the scribes they grumbled, saying, "This man receives sinners and eats with them." So Jesus told them this parable. He said, "What man of you, having 100 sheep, if he has lost one of them, does not leave the 99 in the open country and go after the one that is lost until he finds it? And when he has found it, he lays it on his shoulders, rejoicing. And when he comes home, he calls together his friends and his neighbors, saying to them, 'Rejoice with me, for I have found my sheep that was lost.' Just so I tell you, there will be more joy in heaven over one sinner who repents than over 99 righteous persons who need no repentance." Jesus is like, "What's your problem, guys? Shouldn't you rejoice that sinners are having their lives transformed? Especially seeing as you're religious men." Jesus then tells another story about a lost coin. Verse 8 of Luke 15, "Or what woman, having 10 silver coins, if she loses one coin, does not light a lamp and sweep the house and seek diligently until she finds it? And when she's found it, she calls together her friends and neighbors, saying, 'Rejoice with me, for I have found the coin that I had lost.' Verse 10, 'Just so I tell you, there is joy before the angels of God over one sinner who repents.'" Can you see how Jesus is equating a sinful person's transformation with that of a recovered valuable? But again, not everyone rejoices. The angels do. Jesus does. Even God the Father does, as outlined in the third story, which is the story of the lost son, commonly referred to as the prodigal son, right? Actually, a story about two sons, and it seems like both were lost, but only one was found. Listen to how the father in the story responds when his son returns home from a life of sin and promiscuity. Verse 24 says, "For this my son was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found." And he began to celebrate. Can you see the recurring theme? Dick Lucas would call it the melodic line. In the next chapter, we see the exact same thing happen, but in reverse. We just saw a lost sheep that was found, a lost coin that was found, a lost son that was found. In Luke 16, we see the reverse. We see a beggar found and a lost rich man. And the beggar is a picture of those who don't seem lovable, who are not respectable or savable. But this person is rescued, this person is found, who is then contrasted with the rich man who is lost. And the big point is, this lost rich man looked very much like the religious leaders of Jesus' time. Can you see the picture that's being painted? Lazarus, the beggar, was found. He made it to heaven, and the rich man was lost. He didn't make it to heaven. The tax collectors and sinners, they make it to heaven. What is intimated is that the religious leaders don't. Then in the chapter before ours, in chapter 18, I am going to cover a little bit of the chapter. Jesus goes for the jugular. In Luke chapter 8, in verse 9, it says, "He also told this parable," notice, "to some who trusted in themselves that they were righteous and treated others with contempt." Verse 10, "Two men went up into the temple to pray, one a Pharisee and," "a tax collector, like Zacchaeus." Okay, notice what's going on. A Pharisee, like the religious leaders that Jesus is challenging, and a tax collector. And given a clear context, the big question that we should be asking is, between the Pharisee and the tax collector, which one of them is going to be lost and which one is going to be found? Okay, verse 11. "The Pharisee, standing by himself," in another translation says praying with himself, because it doesn't sound like he's really speaking to God. "He prayed with himself and said, 'God, I thank you that I'm not like other men, extortioners, unjust, adulterers, or even this tax collector. I fast twice a week and I give tithes of all that I get.'" Verse 13, "But the tax collector, standing afar off, would not even lift up his eyes to heaven, but beat his breast, he smote his chest, saying, 'God, be merciful to me, a sinner.'" Now listen to the conclusion. Listen to what Jesus says. Verse 14, "I tell you, this man," that is the tax collector, "went to his house justified rather than the other. For everyone who exalts himself will be humbled, and the one who humbles himself will be exalted." So the tax collector is found, and the Pharisee is lost. Now, our section. I should have said also at the outset, I lost my mind because listening to the reading, I thought, oh my goodness, what am I going to do? What I should have said at the outset is that half of my message is introduction. hopefully, because of the groundwork that we've now done, our text will hopefully unpack itself. And I've split verse 1 to 10 into two sections, and I've called them Man Seeking God, verse 1 to 4, God Seeking Man, verse 5 to 10. So, Luke 19, verse 1 to 4, starting at verse 1, it says, He entered, that is Jesus, Jericho, and was passing through. So Jesus is on his way to Jerusalem, where at the end of the week he will be crucified. Jesus was passing through, but he wasn't just passing through, right? How many of you know every single step of Jesus, every step, every journey that he took, every day was significant. This isn't just a casual coincidence, chance meeting, right? Every conversation was purposeful. Could it be the same? Is true for us in a sense. The only difference is that I often drop the ball. I don't take opportunities that are presented. Jesus responded perfectly on every occasion, constantly bringing glory to the Father. May God help us to respond to our daily divine appointments with wisdom, grace, and the same kind of prayerful consideration. Now, watch this scenario. Remember the context. We are now going to meet a man who is hated. He is an abhorred tax collector, and we've seen how not only the religious crowd feel about such a man. How many of you know tax collectors were hated pretty much by everyone except the Roman authorities because tax collectors did their bidding, right? Israel, under Roman occupation, they were forced to pay taxes, and there was this understandable hostility. But then there were those who hated, who were hated even more than the Romans, that is, those who worked for the Romans, these tax collectors. And because they'd collect taxes and put a little bit on top that they'd cream off and use it to feather their own nests, right? Abusing their position and exhorting their own people. So how do you think people feel about Zacchaeus, right? You can only imagine verse 2. It says there was a man named Zacchaeus. He was a chief tax collector. And notice he was rich. So he's a rich tax collector. And not just a tax collector, he's a chief tax collector. That means he had become successful, and he probably now didn't have to do face-to-face tax collecting anymore. Have you seen a TV program like where you've got these debt collectors and they come and they knock and they say, look, if you can't pay, we'll take it away, right? Well, Zacchaeus, he doesn't have to get his hands dirty like that. He's the guy that they call, right, when there's a problem. He's got these shysty tax collectors working for him or at least under him. And we'll see in a minute how some respond in verse 7 and how Jesus responds in verse 5. So Zacchaeus, as I mentioned, he's a don, right? No exaggeration. As our message title suggests, he's a big man. But at the same time, he's a little man. Look at verse 3. It says, And he was seeking to see who Jesus was, but on account of the crowd, he could not. Why? Because he was small in stature. Verse 4, So he ran on ahead and climbed up into a sycamore tree to see him. For Jesus, he was about to pass that way. So Zacchaeus is a big man economically, socially, maybe even politically, right? He's like an Al Capone type character, if you're old enough to know who Al Capone is. In one sense, he's a big man. In another, physically, he's a very little man. He's a big little man. And because he's height challenged, right, in order for him to see Jesus, he needs a helping height advantage. So notice he climbs up a tree, which is not very becoming of a man of his stature. So can you see he's prominent, but not proud? This man is going through a transformation. No doubt, he was a scoundrel, he was unethical, he was possibly a crook, a rascal, a blackguard. He was a cheat, he was a dastardly lowlife. Not just a lowlife, but a chief lowlife. But this man's going through a transformation. We know this because he does things that are not consistent with a man of his metaphorical stature. He runs in verse 4, and then he also climbs a tree. People of his standing, they call for their chauffeur, right? You get your PA, you get your personal assistant to make initial contact with Jesus and send an invite, you know, to a black tie event. And, you know, you set a diary event for maybe 2026 or, you know, I mean, and in time you get your people to speak to his people. I'm like, this is not consistent with a man of his standing. This man is going through a transformation. And we know that because of the fundamental reason for what seems like irrational behavior at the beginning of verse 3. It says, and he was seeking to see who Jesus was. Wow, this big little man seeking Jesus. He must have heard about Jesus somehow, and maybe like the rich young ruler previously, or even the blind man who cried out to Jesus. He has a keen interest in Jesus, and we can guess, but we're not exactly sure what led him to be perched up this tree. Incidentally, how did you get here today? Especially if you haven't been to this church before, or you know, if you've never been to any church before. How did you get here? Did someone tell you about Jesus and somehow you found yourself here, stuck up a metaphorical tree? Maybe wanting to disprove your friend's arguments or confirm your own suspicions? Or are you here wanting to find out more because you, like Zacchaeus, are seeking Jesus? Well, would it be unfair to summarize verse 1 to 4 as man seeking God? But look now at verse 5 to 10. We're going to see that actually, it's God seeking man. Verse 5, and when Jesus came to the place, he looked up and he said, you thief, you crook. I don't know what you're doing up there looking for me, because as if I'd want anything to do with you, you toe rag. I mean, Jesus didn't say, he didn't actually say that, right? Jesus says in the middle of verse 5, that's probably what I would have said. This verse 5, Jesus says, Zacchaeus, hurry and come down, for I must stay at your house today. Wow, three things. One, Jesus didn't seem surprised to see Zacchaeus, as if, again, maybe this was preordained. Number two, Jesus cheekily invites himself around for dinner. I'm not as cheeky. Adam, the vicar, has invited me around for lunch, I think, later on this afternoon. And then we're going over to Adam number two to go watch the Arsenal-Liverpool game. I'm a bit nervous about that game would be an understatement. But Jesus invites himself around for dinner, which means spending a number of precious hours potentially distracted from his mission. I mean, Jesus, he evidently does not have time to waste, as we mentioned. He's about to go to the cross. Can you see that this actually isn't a distraction, but this is actually a vital part of Jesus' mission? And number three, Jesus, can you see he has love for those that we might potentially be tempted to reject and be disgusted by? Jesus is about to, imagine, go and chill. He's going to go and hang out with Reggie Cray, a repentant Reggie Cray, I might add. Do you know anyone that's despicable? Is there a lesson in here, you know, for us? Can you begin to see how this section, verse 5 to 10, could easily describe God seeking man? And you'd be like, well, Robert, it's Jesus seeking Zacchaeus. It's not God, is it? Or are you trying to say that Jesus is God? Well, let me come back to that in a moment. Look at how Zacchaeus responds in verse 6. It says, he hurried and he came down and received him joyfully. He's like really excited that Jesus wants to come to his house. Notice how the onlookers respond. Verse 7. And when they saw it, they did what we heard individuals do a few chapters earlier. They grumbled. He's gone in to be the guest of a man who is a sinner. Here we go again. We see that same response from the Pharisees in chapter 15, 16, 17, and 18. And here also in our chapter, in chapter 19. Now, the text doesn't say exactly who this group is. It could well be the hypocritical scribes and Pharisees the previous chapter describes these as the crowd. But Zacchaeus, notice, he's not focused on the crowd. He isn't fazed by the crowd. Verse 8, it says, "And Zacchaeus stood and said to the Lord, 'Behold, Lord.'" Hear what he calls him? Lord. He says, "The half of my goods I give to the poor. And if I've defrauded anyone of anything, I restore it fourfold." Look how bad this little big man was. Can you see him admitting to defrauding people? But then look at the incredible change. Can you see that this man is going for a genuine transformation? A man that could have easily been written off. Maybe some of you, like me, are old enough. I should have mentioned earlier, the girl that I met, in the girl that was my girlfriend in the post office, eventually became my wife the year after. We got saved, we got baptized, we got married in 1990. Sadly, she's not able to be here with you and me today. I just thought I'd mention that. Going back to the fact that we got married in 1990, some of you, if you're as old as me, may remember the cross and the switchblade with Nicky Cruz and David Wilkerson. Nicky Cruz was like the criminal individual who David Wilkerson's the preacher, shares the gospel with, a little bit like we had the gospel shared with us over a process of time, and eventually he becomes a Christian, doesn't he? Nicky Cruz. Well, how about modern day Nicky Cruz's? Gang members, racists, Muslim extremists, drug dealers, people smugglers, etc. How do we feel about modern day Nicky Cruz's? And if you think about it, how many of you know these people, for all intents and purposes, are lost? What is my attitude to those who are the lost? Let me remind you, I used to be Zacchaeus, and if you're here today and you're a Christian, I'm sure you can also identify with Zacchaeus. You used to be Zacchaeus. And if you're a Christian, we, if you remember, at a certain point in time, were on a sinking ship until Jesus rescued us. We would be lost unless Jesus found us. Amazing grace, right? How sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me. I once was lost, but now I'm found. I was blind, but now I see. Finally, in verse 9 and 10, look at Jesus' response to Zacchaeus' response. Verse 9, "And Jesus said to him," wow, whoa, "today it's evident that salvation has come to this house, since he," that is Zacchaeus, "is also a son of Abraham." I mean, who would have believed it? And in a sense, this is kind of like a Bible code word for someone who's justified instead of condemned, someone who's redeemed instead of rejected. This man, he was already a biological son of Abraham, but now he's become a spiritual son of Abraham. And how did it happen? How was this man rescued? Verse 10 about Jesus, it says, "For the Son of Man," Jesus, "he came to seek and to save the lost." Verse 1 to 4 of our text, I should say my text, describes Zacchaeus as a man seeking God. Earlier, I argued that this section, verse 5 to 10, describes God seeking man. How can Jesus, as I mentioned earlier, be described as God seeking man? Well, the term "son of man" was one of Jesus' favorite terms, if not his favorite term for himself. And it appears a few times in the Old Testament. Just one occasion I'm going to reference is Daniel chapter 7. Verse 13, it says, "I saw in the night vision," says Daniel, "and behold, with the clouds of heaven there came one," note, "like a son of man. And he came to the Ancient of Days and was presented before him. And to him," that is to the Son of Man, who I'm arguing is Jesus, "was given dominion and glory and a kingdom that some people," no, "all peoples, nations, and languages should serve him. And his dominion is an everlasting dominion which shall not pass away. His kingdom, one that shall not be destroyed." And I mean, if you know, Jesus is not only the Son of God. Jesus is God the Son. He's the second member of the Godhead. Jesus is the second member of the Trinity. So it would be fair to say that verse 5 to 10 is God seeking man. But notice, Zacchaeus was seeking God, to be completely accurate, as my subheading gave away, Zacchaeus was actually sought whilst seeking. We could even say that where Zacchaeus humbly climbed up a tree to seek God, can you see that God, even more humbly, would come down, would climb down from heaven in order to seek Zacchaeus? And to take it even further, who is actually the little big man? I would argue that it's not Zacchaeus, it's actually Jesus. Because Jesus makes himself little or seemingly insignificant in stepping down, if you like, he makes himself small in stature. Yet Jesus is also the definition of the big man, the one who has ultimate and absolute authority. He's a king, actually. The book of Revelation describes him as a king of kings. And we just read in Daniel that he was given dominion and glory and a kingdom, and all peoples, all nations and languages should serve him. His dominion is an everlasting dominion which shall not pass away. His kingdom one that shall not be destroyed. Today, we saw Zacchaeus, didn't we, climb a tree. 7 days after this, we'll see Jesus climb a tree and be nailed to it. The little big man sought while seeking. Can I pray? For the Son of Man came to seek and save the lost. Heavenly Father, thank you for sending us Jesus, a real superhero. Father, Jesus is the original Superman. Father, thank you that fact is actually stranger than fiction. Amen.